listening to the Master of One podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Master of One podcast, the podcast that's hoping everything goes according to plan. In this episode, we talk about American animals and children of blood and bone. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
And I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
So grab your disguises and your go bag, because it's time to get this heist underway.
And then this is where Luke would say something.
Kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Before we jump into it, Luke isn't here. All right, Patrick, what about your week?
That's right. Two cool things. We are settled in, which means that we're back in the swing of pop culture goodness, and I've got a couple things to show off on that note. And when I say show off, what I mean to say is that I can see them and you can't. And for those that missed it, by the way, because it seems like a few people missed it, the YouTube channel, these episodes aren't going to the YouTube channel now. We're now using the YouTube channel for, like standalone content, like playtests and run throughs and unboxings and that type of stuff. So definitely keep checking the YouTube channel. There's stuff posted. And in fact, there's a playthrough of Burger Battle coming out, this week. It should be up now. Go check it. But just so you know, if you're going to find the episode, it won't be on there, clearing up any confusion. But now that that is done...
Was there a lot of confusion?
There was enough that I've had like five people ask me about it.
Oh, all right.
So,
where,
I feel like...
Where were all those... I guess those were the five people who watched the episodes on YouTube.
Yeah, and that's normally my answer of why it doesn't exist anymore. So on that note, Kid Robot... you know, they're still putting out stuff. Now, one thing that's interesting, and you know, this is what we were told would happen. I mean, Frank Kozik told us this on the show, that they were moving towards doing, how do I say this, seeking out these people that were doing, like, custom toys and then funding runs for them. So, like, funding, like, a run of 30 toys or a run of 40 toys. And so there's been maybe... And I say there's been less. I don't know that I'm the best judge of this, but it seems like we've had less of the, 20 different artists blind box series lately, and we've had a lot more just one-off toys. That being said, there's incredibly cool stuff being put out by Kid Robot. I mean, for sure, I had the fear that maybe the more they started using licenses, that maybe it would somehow diminish the quality or the creativity behind the stuff that was coming out. That has not been the case. I think they've been able to balance using their licenses that they have very, very well, and still putting off fun one-off toys. And anyway, I think it's just as good as ever. And on that note, here is the newest Kid Robot 8-inch Dunny, and this is the Plush Guts Dunny. So they made 1,000 of these. And they sold out maybe in about 15 minutes or so. I mean, they didn't sell out in seconds, but it was minutes. I mean, they didn't stay around for very long. And I was honestly kind of surprised because a run of 1,000, I mean, that's a decent number of toys. But yeah, they sold out. And for those that have not seen this before, it is the Dunny platform, but it is clear. It's a clear plastic. And in the plastic is a... It's all the guts. I mean, there's a bone in each ear. There's like the big brain. There's the jawline and the teeth. There's like, the body is stitched red to look like muscle. And then in the front you see, lungs and a heart. And then, maybe a couple other appendages, and it's all inside of this plastic shell. So I don't know why, but I have this total thing for, being able to see through stuff. I think this started back in the, Andrew, do you remember the phones in the like early 90s that had clear shells and you could like see all the guts inside the phone?
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, for some reason, like when I was a kid, those things were fascinating. I always wanted one of those. My parents never bought me one because we already had a phone. We weren't going to spend $20 on another phone. But now every opportunity I get to buy something like that, I totally want. It's the reason that if you look behind me, I've got another 8-inch dunny right there that has the skeleton, and then I've got another 3-inch dunny right there that is also has a skeleton. So I'm laughing because
I'm the only one who can see it, and I've seen these before. Like you're saying, if you look over my shoulder, but this you've
already
communicated.
I was specifically talking to you.
I
know you've seen them.
All right.
But the point is, so this is just another in the I'm going to have a whole series of X-ray dunnies. That's what's happening. But anyway, so this is the Plush Quest Dunny. Very, very cool. Very glad to get it and add it to the collection. If you want one, they're selling on eBay. There's a few up. They're kind of all over. I saw one that sold for like $250. And I think brand new, they were like $50 or $60. But then I saw another one that sold for like $90. So the range is all over. If you check eBay and watch it, you'll find a good deal for sure. But very, very happy to have this add to the collection. And I also want to say too, their packaging, like the box itself for this is great. You know, one person that I really love in the toy world is Joe Ledbetter, old Joseph Ledbetter. But his packaging is pretty not good. Like if you get, like when we got the Firezilla and like the Catzilla, like those toys, the boxes, they didn't look that good. And like the little plastic inserts fell out of both. I had three of the boxes, all three of mine, the plastic inserts fell out. And so it just, the packaging was so below what the toy was. That is not the case with this. Any of the Kid Robot packaging, this embossing and everything that they have on the box, and
it's got Spot UV on it.
Yeah, Spot UV. It looks so freaking good. So, awesome job. Good job. Love the toy. The other thing beyond that is, and Andrew, you and I both got something, although we're not holding it in our hands yet, and that's the big pin event gallery thing that's going on at Hero Complex. Lots of great pins. It was like 11 pages of pins to go through, and all kinds of stuff. So I picked up two pins. Andrew, you picked up two pins, and I'm sure we'll wait till we get them in to like show them off and talk about them. But if you need to add some more pins to your life, go check out hcgart.com. Click on the latest.
There's a lot of good ones.
Oh, some amazing ones.
There's a lot of bad ones too, though.
There are just as many bad ones as there are good ones. Okay, but what was the
I would say this way. Saying they're bad implies like they're bad quality. I wouldn't say they're bad quality. They don't at all catch my interest or my design aesthetic. So if you like my design aesthetic, there's something for you. But if you don't like my design aesthetic, there's still something for you. I think there's something kind of from one edge of the spectrum to the other edge. So, you know, get out there and check them out.
Now, on that note, on the note of the the Big Gulp one sold out. I'm glad I got one of those, Andrew. So on the note of the Pin Invitational, though, I did want to point out one person specifically that that I saw that I thought was a standout beyond Ape Meets Girl. I will say that I was picking out pins, and there were a couple I saved thinking, man, these look great, and then they were all made by Ape Meets Girl. So Ape, it turns out that what you do and what I like, we're just totally in sync. You should know that. But the other standout for me was, what were those brooches called, Andrew? Like the legendary brooches or whatever they were?
They were like,
I'm trying to pull up the woman's name right now.
Powerful Women, something like that. Like Legendary Women or something like that. But they're brooches. And they look like ivory. And they're like a three-dimensional press. Like, They're not pins per se. They're brooches. So if you know what a brooch is, it's like a dimensional portrait of a face at portrait like a side. Oh my gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm totally blanking. Just look up the word brooch and you'll know what we're talking about. But they are that
it's the
of
silhouette.
Pop culture
it's
women.
The silhouette.
That's the word I'm looking for. So it's but it's all like pop culture powerful women like Princess Leia and other ones. I can't remember any of the other ones right now.
Well, it's not Cersei. It's Lady of Dragons.
Yeah. Daenerys. Yep.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I'm trying to pull up those pins right now because I want to actually tell you who the artist is instead of being this like vague about it. but I think they all sold out because I can't find them on their site right now. I believe it's Blue Ruin is who the artist is. So just go look up Blue Ruin.
That's the company anyway, whether it's the actual artist or not.
So yes, Blue Ruin is the, right, it's the company, and I mean, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl or who it is that does them, but Blue Ruin has some incredible, incredible pins. Yeah, the Legendary Ladies, they have, if you go to Blue Ruin website, blueruinco.com, they have Frida, Daenerys, Betty Page, Wonder Woman, Audrey Hepburn, Princess Leia. There's tons of them, but they also have a couple of, the Meet Me in Montauk pin, and then also the pin with Joel and Clementine from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which, is, you know, those are my favorite. And then, like, they do the Blue Ruin does a lot of stuff with Friends and stuff like that. So, anyway, go check out that shop, because that, to me, 8 Meets Girl and Blue Ruin were the standouts. Again, lots of great pins, lots of pins I wouldn't own, but those two were just, they were, like, firing on all cylinders for me. So, Andrew, I talked a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry. What's been going on with you? I'm making up for Luke. That's what just I just took mine and Luke's.
Yeah, you will notice this week there is a very significant absence of Luke in all of the episodes you'll hear this week, and that's just due to life events that are happening. And so, anyway, Luke is not gone. He's just he's gone, but he's not forgotten. He will be back. He will.
Yeah, he will return.
It's like at the end of the Stingers, at the end of the Marvel movies.
Exactly.
Luke will return in Avengers 4. I've been going to a lot of Netflix time. I was gonna say, you don't go to Netflix. You just are in front of Netflix. I don't know. I've been watching a lot of Netflix. That's what I'm trying to say. I've been home alone for the last week and a few days at this point. Chandra and Cooper have been gone. And so I'm like on season, I want to say 7 now of The Office again, which is like this is at least my 10th time watching that show all the way through. So, I will have finished this series by the time Chandra and Cooper get home. So, it's just been essentially that. And then reading a book that I'm going to talk about during my master category. So I won't go into any of that any further. I did get a couple of things. I went to the Disney store and got the DuckTales, the new version of DuckTales, like PVC figures. They're like the little designer statuettes, yep. Tiny little figures. And you saw those, Patrick, that set. They are so rad. I mean, I'm already in love with the style of the new DuckTales, but the production of these figures is on point. It's not, they're not cheap. They don't feel cheap. They don't feel mass production. They feel very, very cool. And so I got those. I think the style lends itself well to figures like that. Not everything lends itself well to that, like, because Disney does this now with all of their properties. They do like these bulk packs of miniature statues. They do them with Star Wars and stuff, and it just doesn't work as well with Star Wars because they're very realistic, and so you lose a lot of that detail in the mass production figures and stuff. So, but with DuckTales, very, very cool. So if you like DuckTales, go online. There'll be in the show notes. There'll be a link to where you can pick these up. If you don't have a Disney store around you, if you have a Disney store around you, go and get them from the actual store because they're cheaper. I think I paid $15 for the set, and online they're like $25, which isn't bad. But then you have to pay for shipping as well. So they're pretty much double the cost if you end up having to buy them online. So I got that. I also, while I was there, got the toy box version of Boba Fett, which isn't new. These have been around for like the last year or so, or the last 8 months. But finally got around to getting one. It is the same design as all the Disney Infinity figures. And so when that went away, they shifted all of their attention to making articulated figures. And they're a little bit bigger than the Disney Infinity figures. So if you like that design, you'll love these action figures. They're very, very cool. He is now on my shelf in my office with all of my other Boba Fett paraphernalia. And then finally, I got a print. I saw Roger Rabbit, the film Who Framed Roger Rabbit, just recently celebrated its 30th anniversary, I believe. I want to say it's 30th anniversary. I might be wrong about that. Maybe it's 25th anniversary. Anyway, it just celebrated an anniversary. And that's one of my all-time favorite movies. If you could see this behind me, you could see a Who Framed Roger Rabbit print from our friend Tim Anderson right behind me, which is beautiful and it's stunning. And then I have my Jessica Rabbit standing right over to the right of me on my studio desk from Funko. I forget what they call them, but the bombshell figures. Yeah. They're really cool. But so online I saw, I find pretty much all of my artists online at this point. I saw this drawing online. Patrick, I'll show you, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes. Let's see if it can focus. There you go. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I found this.
You and
this,
Jay Ratner, y'all just share this stuff back and forth.
Essentially. Actually, I didn't share this with him. I need to text this to him. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome.
It's incredible. So the artist that I got it from, her name is Steph Lou Art. That's her handle. I'm guessing it's like Stephanie Lou or Stephanie Lewis or something. But
it's
30
years.
What?
It's the 30.
30th. Okay, yeah. Cool. Man, that's long. That's old. That's crazy. All right. But Steph Lou, she posted this online and I loved it. I felt like it's just a full body digital painting of Jessica Rabbit, kind of characterized, but not really, because she's already a character, but just this really, really unique, fun take on Jessica Rabbit. A lot of people tend to take Jessica Rabbit and make her boobs like massive because they're already big, but that's not what takes center stage in this drawing. So I loved that it was a kind of a more modest approach to it. But it's just a beautiful illustration. So I messaged her and said I would love to own this. And within like a half hour, she posted back and said, I'll get it up on my shop tonight. And so within a couple hours, I went on to her shop, purchased it, and it's here. It's beautiful. I mean, super cheap too. I think I paid like $15 for it. It was $15 for an 8.5 by 11 print, and the print is really, really nice stock. So I don't know if she's printing it herself or if she's outsourcing that, but it's a really nice thick card stock with a nice tooth to it, a nice texture to the actual paper. So I'm excited to get that framed and put up with my Who Framed Roger Rabbit stuff. But anyway, if you're a fan of Who Framed Roger Rabbit or just really nice illustration, check out the show notes and you'll be able to find this artist and follow her and pick something up from her shop. And when you do, let them know you heard it from the podcast. Yeah. That would just be awesome. All right. So I think that's going to be it for the Around the Table. Up next, we're going to talk about some master categories. The master categories each week are when we get to talk about the tokens we drew the week before. We pick our topics based on those categories. And Patrick, how about this? Since I know both of us know what you're talking about, well, we all know what each other is talking about, but we both saw what you're talking about, I'm going to start this one.
All right.
How does that sound? Okay.
Sounds good. Do it.
So, y'all ever heard of The Tonight Show?
No. How much is it?
So The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, I love Jimmy Fallon. We're big Jimmy Fallon fans in our house. And he did this thing for the summer reading where he essentially put out 6 books that he wanted to read and had the audience and had everybody who wanted to vote for what book that Jimmy was going to read during the summer and that everybody could read along with him. And so he had these 6 books. One of them really stuck out to me, and it was The Children of Blood and Bone. Lo and behold, everybody else felt the same way, or most other people felt the same way, because that's what was chosen by popular demand. And Chandra picked it up for me. It came in the mail randomly, and there was a little note that said, enjoy reading this book, essentially, because she knew I was going to be home alone, need a little extra, you know, I'd have a little extra time on my hands. So I got this book. I've been reading it for the last 2 days. I'm almost done with it. It's a 525-page book. It's a novel, fiction. But I don't usually read through books this quickly, but I can't. It's all I can do to stop reading it to do other things that I need to do, like go to work or take a shower or eat food. Or watch The Office, because that's what I do when I take a break. But man, this book is so incredible. I'll read you just the quick synopsis of it. Zele Edebola remembers when the soil of Orisha hummed with magic. Burners ignited flames, titers beckoned waves, and Zele's Reaper mother summoned forth souls. But everything changed once magic disappeared. Under the orders of a ruthless king, the Magi were targeted and killed, leaving Zele without a mother and her people without hope. Now Zele has one chance to bring back magic and strike against the monarchy. With the help of a rogue princess, Zele must outwit and outrun the crown prince, who is hellbent on eradicating magic for good. Danger lurks in Orisha, where Snow Leopardes, I can't remember how they say that. It's snow leopards, but they're like monsters, fictional versions of them. They're like bigger and whatever. Anyway, they prowl and vengeful spirits wait in the waters. Yet the greatest threat may be Zele herself, as she struggles to control her powers and her growing feelings for an enemy. So people are looking at this book, the kind of thing, the buzz that's being put out there right now. This book is relatively new. It just came out in March. It just released in March. It's already a New York Times bestseller. The scuttlebutt around the water cooler is that this is kind of the author is Tomei Adeyemi, I think is how you say.
So let me just, when you're reading this book, are you just saying, like, are you shortening everything? Because you've had trouble pronouncing at least five things you've
said.
No,
but I'm
so
also
far.
Not reading it out loud when I'm reading it to myself. Had I taken a second to read through the thing before we started this record, I probably could have done it much more quickly. But she's a Nigerian author.
Yeah.
And the book it definitely takes place. It's in a fictional place, but it's very much inspired by African
like
culture.
Tomi Adeyemi or something.
Tomi Adeyemi is probably how you would pronounce it, yeah.
What's crazy, sorry, this is not really related, but it just struck me. Moving here, so I remember living in Griffin and then moving up to Ohio. And I remember how different pronunciations were for things that, for words that I was used to. And then I remember moving here, and it's the same thing again. Like, people choose really weird ways to pronounce stuff. This is still within America. And so, like, looking at outside countries, like, yeah, I mean, it's, I can't even get pronunciations right from one state to another. There's no way I'm going to get something right outside of the country. It's just crazy how much it drifts.
Yeah. So the character names, like I was saying, the author is Nigerian. There's definitely heavy influence in that, in the characters and everything, in their naming conventions and everything. So, I don't know if I'm reading it the way it's intended to be. So, like, I read The Hunger Games, and I went through the entire reading of The Hunger Games. Actually, I audibled The Hunger Games, and I thought that the kind of the love interest of the story, his name was Peter. The person who was reading it just had an English accent, because they kept saying PETA.
PETA.
And then for the very first time I saw it written, I was like, who is that? And so anyway, yeah, so the pronunciation, that whole thing, I may not be reading it correctly, because I'm not well versed in African culture. But all of that aside, the story is beautiful. It's great. People are kind of likening her to like a new J.K. Rowling or George R.R. Martin, creating a universe. If you look if you open the book, the dust jacket, if you can see this, Patrick, there's like a map.
Oh yeah.
Of the land, and it has all the different places kind of mapped out, very much like a Harry Potter or Game of Thrones type feel to it. So there is. The latter fifth of the book focuses a little bit more on like a love story. There's kind of a little bit of everything in the book. There's action, there's adventure, there's fantasy, there's magic, but there's also a love story. Man, it's just really, really good. And the cover art on the book is incredible. It's done by Rich Diaz, D-E-A-S. Mm-hmm. There'll be a link to this in the show notes for sure.
That's familiar.
He's a book illustrator, so you may have seen his work on various other things. But, man, if you're looking for something to pick up, if you're in a lull reading-wise, and there's no second, third, or fourth books to this yet, so you could read it's kind of a one and done right now. I imagine there will be more to follow in the series, just based on how well this is doing and everything, and it kind of creates a world. But if you want to get onto something while it's really early, before it, you know, while it's still blowing up and it's not completely saturated, if you're one of those people who enjoys that kind of stuff, this book is a good pickup for you. Go to Amazon and pick it up. But Children of Blood and Bone, really, really good. I will have finished it by the time this episode airs. So you can message me on our Discord channel once you've read it and we can talk all about it. I'm dying for someone else that I know to read it so I can talk about it with them. So I imagine the movie rights will be purchased very soon, if they haven't already been in negotiations, just because of the kind of story it is and because that's how Hollywood works. So,
and Game of Thrones is over. They're done filming.
Exactly. So,
here we go. This is the next one.
This could potentially, depending on how this shapes out and the more the story, the further the story kind of moves along, it could be a series, at least a mini series on HBO. They would
Did
do a great job.
Did you have a moment
it.
Of sadness when you realized that filming wrapped on Game of Thrones?
No, because I hadn't realized it until just now, and we're in like show mode right now, so I'm not really allowing that to take the full breadth of how I feel about it right now.
Yeah, it was a few days ago.
Okay. So they got married. So Jon Snow got married in the midst of that.
Yes. So literally, I think so. The cast party, I want to say, was 2 weekends ago, like the final wrap party. But then they had a couple more reshoots they had to do. So I think the last like scene was filmed like a week ago. But wow. It's finished. Like, it's all filmed.
All right. Unless they lose all the film and then they got to start over.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Hope they have a backup. All right, that's it for me, Children of Blood and Bone. Tomi Adeyemi. Adeyemi, I think you're right. It's Adeyemi. Yeah. Go pick it up. It's great.
Well,
it's
that's how we'd pronounce it here.
Adeyemi, yeah. Tomi Adeyemi. All right, Patrick, take us down to Funky Town.
I wonder if that's a good enough excuse just to say, as long as you pronounce it the way you would in your region, it's acceptable.
I don't know, because I think names are important to people, and I would want people to make an effort to say it the way that it's intended to be said for me, and not just be like, I'm from South Georgia, I'll say however I want. Like, I don't know.
Well, when you say it that way, that does seem egotistical.
Yeah. So.
All right, so I'm going to talk about American Animals. You know, did I have TV and film this week? No. But Luke's not here, so we're talking American Animals.
And we've already talked about plenty of toys.
That's right. We've already talked about tons of toys, so it makes sense. Let's talk about a movie. On that note, there's a notable movie that came out as well this past weekend, which is Ant-Man and Wasp. We are not ignoring that film. We've all seen it. We want to talk about it, but
we're
going to
wait for a larger group of people.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit different format. So we're going to talk about Ant-Man and Wasp, not today. We're going to talk about instead American Animals. So American Animals has actually been out now. I want to say we're up to a month. They staggered the release a lot. I mean, instead of doing like 1 or 2 weeks limited and then just going wide release, they literally had something like 4 to 6 weeks of like planned stepping up in releases. Now, I don't know how that's actually working in their favor. Part of me thinks they're having to do that to kind of step around some of these big releases, because when you have a movie like Ant-Man and Wasp in theaters, that might, if it's in a smaller theater, it might take up all their screens. And so like you have to kind of work around some of these films so they literally have space on the screens to show the movie. And certainly this isn't the big movie. So that being said, I'm not sure how it's done as far as numbers go, but it is still playing, even though it's been out for this long. You can still probably find it in a theater near you, at least in like if you're in like a larger area. So, American Animals. American Animals stars a bunch of people you know but don't realize that you know. Okay, and what's funny is
a bunch of people you recognize but you don't know their name.
Exactly, because I didn't. And some of them, like, you know their face but you can't place them in another film. But you know they've been in another film.
Oh, you're that guy was in to The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Oh, that guy's in American Horror Story. Oh, she was just in Handmaid's Tale.
Well, there's
all
some
these
other
notable things.
So the guy that was in Killing of a Sacred Deer was also in Dunkirk. You have the guy from X-Men. And from Kick-Ass. One of the guys that was in fact, one of the main guys in Everybody Wants Some, and then also Edge of 17. So, yes, there are a lot of big movies.
That's so funny. You're mentioning the movies that these people are in, and I'm mentioning the TV shows. You notice that? Because the guy that played yeah. Quicksilver is also the guy from American Horror Story.
Right. Exactly. So the point is, again, you're not going to, if I said their names right now, you don't know who they are. But you've seen films with them in them, and they're all legitimate, great actors, actresses. So, American Animals, this is going to be, I'm going to say spoilers. I'm going to be a bit loose with this story. I won't do like the big, like, you know, penultimate, whatever. But I do want to set up what it's about because I want you to get excited enough to want to go see it. I think that's important because let me go and start by saying this. I think it's a film you should see. I think it's a very, very well done film. And it's probably a bit different than most of what you're watching right now. So American Animals is the true story of four people who set out to rob one of their universities. And specifically, one of the universities had some very rare, very expensive books. One was Darwin, I guess, The Origin of Species. Another would have been the Audubon books and some old Bibles, things like that, but very, very rare books. They realized, hey, they're not really that guarded, so we could probably pretty easily go in there and just take them and then try to turn and flip them. So that's what's happening in the film. It is a heist movie of sorts, but not in the way that Ocean's 11 is. They're just stealing stuff. Now, that being said, it follows these four people, but you also meet the real, like the actual four people in the film. So,
Can I give you a what I have kind of classified it?
Sure.
It's a hyper documentary.
Hyper. So, okay. Yeah. Imagine a documentary, but whenever they try to do like the, reenactments, they're filmed really, really well with people from Dunkirk.
With actual actors.
yeah, exactly.
Not like, whatever that show was that, what is it? Most Wanted.
Right, it's not like that style, and like the camera is always like shaky because it's doing 12 frames instead of like 24. That's a good way to put it. In a lot of ways, it feels like you're sitting down to watch a documentary. Like it feels more like a documentary than it does a movie. That being said, the acting is incredible. The soundtrack is also wonderful. That's all I'll say about that. It's great. But the story itself, and I think this is where it differs. Like, it's already different in the way it's kind of presenting itself because it's not a straightforward movie. But I think where it also really differs is in the tone of what's happening on the screen. There are a few moments in the film. So a couple things. One, I knew the outcome of the film before I sat down. Even knowing that, it is one of the most edge of my seat movies that I've seen. Even 100%. Knowing the outcome of the film. I mean, I was squirming in my chair. I was so anxious and uncomfortable and at what was happening. On top of that, there are a couple of times in the film that get a bit violent. But in the scope of what you would see in a movie normally, it is nothing. It is so minimal for what you would normally see. That being said, the way the film portrayed it, it makes you feel like you've just witnessed the most horrific, like, crime that a person could even imagine committing to another person. And I think that's what's made this film a standout for me. It has taken something that you could very easily see how a group of four kids in a twisted way could talk about and do something like this. It does a good enough job showing you how people could connect the dots that you can kind of empathize how they connect the dots. And then at the same time, it shows you kind of like the execution and the outcome and all those things in such a visceral way that, like, I felt sick to my stomach at one point. And again, in the context of any other heist film or any other film where there's violence or any film, whatever, the things that happen on screen were nothing. But it just rang much more true. Now, what is odd? Or let me first, Andrew, is there anything that you want to add to that or any other things you want to say about the film?
I thought the cinematography and the way in which they told the story was like ultra unique. There were several moments where the real person started to say, is telling a part of the story, and it's just a fixed camera shot on them. And they said, and then I was like, da 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 da, and them speaking what they said overlaps with what the character then is of them is saying, and then it takes us into this other scene. It's very, very unique. I've never seen any film that portrays a real life scenario. I think the closest to it would probably be I, Tonya, but uh-huh. I, Tonya doesn't have any of the real act or any of the real people in it.
Right.
So take the storytelling documentary style of I, Tonya and mix that with the actual people who are a part of it. And I think that's probably a really good way to understand how this film was made.
Like, to go a step further, what you're saying, sometimes their accounts don't line up with what happened. And instead of choosing one over the other, they'll just show you both of them. Like, one person will start talking, it'll show it one way. The other guy will start talking, and it will change the account to show you what he's saying.
You'll see the same scene, but with different dialogue and with seeing things through a different perspective. It's very, very unique and very cool.
Very cool. Now, I do have a question for you, because I read a review recently, and if you search American Animals, one of the first reviews you'll see is the Roger Ebert review, at least the one from that site. It got a 1.5 stars, according to Roger Ebert, or the reviewer. The reviewer is not Roger Ebert. The reviewer is Odie Henderson. And the reviewer felt, frankly, that, and I'll summarize a lot. You can certainly read the review, and I'll link off to it. Basically, that it was kind of glamorized. The whole movie was kind of saying, like, hey, if you're four white middle class American kids, then you can go do X, Y, and Z, and everything will turn out fine, and then you'll get to be in your own movie. Is that the impression you got from the film? Because I'll say, for me, that is so different than what I walked out of the theater feeling about the portrayal of the people in the film.
I absolutely did not get that feeling. I felt like you. There were moments where I was literally sitting on the edge of my seat, and my insides were just in knots, feeling the anxiety and everything of what these characters are going through, what these people were going through. And without, you know, I don't want to give anything away if you don't know the story, but at the end of it, all that it does is every single one of these people who was involved in it at the end of it regrets doing it. And it's so obvious that they regret doing it. Some of them even say they regret doing it. And at no way do I feel like it glorifies it. Did they make a movie about it? Absolutely. But you know what? It's any movie that's made that's based on a true story doesn't automatically mean that you're saying that what happened was good, but it's a good story. It's a story that is compelling, and people want to hear compelling stories. It doesn't mean that everything that happens in it is something that everyone should do. It just means this was a very compelling story. And I think there's some moral implications. I think there are some morality implications on the backside of it that it kind of causes or forces you to question for yourself.
Absolutely.
Like there's one very specific thing that is said in the movie about why they did the thing that they did, and kind of makes you have to go, where do I fit in that scope?
Yeah, I'll echo that. I mean, there are... when it comes to purpose, when it comes to one of the things very literally has to do with getting creative inspiration. Like what links do you go to find purpose for your life, to find inspiration for your life, to stand out to whatever. And yes, this is maybe watching this film. And again, there are some very specific quotes that you should almost take a pen and paper with you, because there's some incredible quotes in the film from the actual people as they're kind of recounting the story and what they were asking themselves. But it's a movie that you walk out of, maybe this isn't a length that I would go to, but kind of what are the parallels in my life? And what am I trying to get? And then is that actually valuable? Is it actually noble? Is it actually... It is a movie that I walked out of, and I needed time to not talk to people and just to like let things run through my head for a bit. So that being said, I wish we had seen it later in the evening. We saw it in like the middle of the day, and it's not really a middle of the day movie. You need to see it where you can walk outside and it's dark and rainy and you can just go think for a bit. But it is a captivating film. Mackenzie, you know, my wife, she saw it and she did say she felt a bit bored for maybe the first like 20 or 30 minutes, but then it kind of picked up into the meat of, you know, what they're planning and stuff. And from that point, she was captivated as well. And she walked out loving the film. So, if you have the opportunity to see the film, I definitely recommend seeing it. Cinematography is great. Sound is great. The acting's great. I think the story is great. And I think it does cause you to ask a lot of questions. Very, very good film.
Number.
If you, yeah, golly.
I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, I think so. I think 9's great. I'll say 9 out of 10.
And so I'm putting it in a documentary. I'm putting it in the same genre as Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, I like saying hyper. Did you say hyper documentary? Is that what your phrase was?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good thing. So anyway, that's American Animals. Watch the film before it disappears from theaters. It's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that you said this, but it's MoviePass's first distributed film.
Yeah, so I guess, so they actually bought the rights to American Animals and they bought the rights to Gotti. Gotti appears to be a trash fire. I think right now it's rocking a solid 0 on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not
looking
very
good. Is John Travolta done? Can we just, are we on board with saying that John Travolta is officially done?
Well, I think he has been for the past decade, right?
I mean, I agree. He did. There was a bit of a spark that came back when he was in the OJ, miniseries.
Right.
But even then he was not the highlight of that series whatsoever. So, anyway, that's a different story.
So bizarre, too, just what John Travolta was and represented as far as, like, an actor and a person, and then now it's basically, I mean, it almost feels forgotten. Because it's hard to see, it's almost hard to see a spark of goodness in anything. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's weird that, maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe I perceive things differently because when people were famous and my age and all that kind of stuff. But it seemed like John Travolta was a name like saying Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise is still out here with a new Mission Impossible film, which we'll be seeing in a couple weeks. Can't freaking wait. He's out here breaking ankles and crowd pleasing and making fun, captivating, exciting movies. And John Travolta's super weird and is full of rumors and is making Gotti. Yeah. So, man, it's just crazy. Two paths diverged. Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know why I put them in a category together, but it seemed like they were like, so, I don't know. I feel like they are similar levels.
What's the word I'm looking for? Crap, I'm totally blanking. Where
it was like the actor heavyweights. I don't know what the...
They were at the same time doing similar budget type movies.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe that's I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like, that's the reason I would pair them. I don't know why I'd pair them. There's other people, but whatever. It doesn't matter. That's it. That's all I have. That's all for me.
This Thursday, we have an incredibly fun guest. It is the creator of the brand new game Burger Battle, live now on Kickstarter. And you're going to want to tune into that episode. But just as a quick teaser, Mr. Andrew Heath, tell us, what is one card that didn't make it to the final game and why?
All right, so I had this card that would pretty much, if you play it, it could be any ingredient you want it to. So, like, if you need just a blank card, choose your own ingredient, basically. If you wanted it to be a bun, you throw it down. It's a bun. But the issue Yeah, but the issue...
Like a wild card.
Wild card. Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah. But the issue was, like, when you play it, is it a battle card or is it an ingredient? When people steal it, how does it change to something else? So the mechanics there just didn't work, so we just had to nix it for the final game.
Oh, man. Okay, I could see how that would be super fun, but at the same time be hard to kind of maneuver that.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe in an expansion at some point down the road.
We'll see.
Maybe. All right, well, tune in to the rest of the episode on Thursday where we get to talk all the ins and outs of Burger Battle, and, oh, man, it's going to be a blast. I can't wait to talk to you then. Well, that's it for this episode. You can find us on mofonepodcast.com where you can find show notes and links to all the stuff we just talked about. There's a lot of stuff we talked about, things to go purchase, stuff to check out, stuff to see. Go to the page on our website, and you can see all that stuff in the show notes. You can follow us on social media. Just search MF1 Podcast on all the different platforms. That's where we are. Connect with us there. You can also connect with us on our Discord channel. Go to MF1Podcast.com/family. And you can be a part of the conversation each and every day. You can support the show by liking, subscribing, rating, reviewing, doing all of the things that are super helpful on the internet that help spread the word and share what's going on. If you like what's happening here, let us know about it. Let your friends know about it. If you buy anything because you've listened to this show, let those people know that you heard about it from us. That's going to be helpful too. So just do that. You can do that on all the different platforms. Just find us and like, subscribe, share, do all that stuff. You can also support the show financially by going to patreon.com/mof1podcast, or you can go to shop.mof1podcast.com to buy something, a shirt, a hat, a mug, a pin, and you can support the show and then look cool while you're doing it. Or at least we'll think you look cool.
Cool is an understatement.
That's true.
I mean, that's probably a good word for it.
Yeah, but I would say it's fine.
These hats are freaking baller.
The hats
and the
are good.
Pins, we've talked about the pins before, but there are not very many people doing that style of pin with the clear tinted like enamel or whatever. It looks baller. It looks great.
It's really good. Do that. That's what you should do.
You don't even have to tell people you listen to the podcast.
No.
Just buy the pin and the hat because they look awesome. And then you can just make up what it stands for.
Yeah, tell them you made it. That's fine with us.
We're
good with that. But that's it for this episode. We're going to get out of here. We promise Luke will be back with us very shortly. But we're going to get out of this for now. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
Peace out.
Hi.
I know. I was waiting for Luke.